Hey, gang, are you in a band in Austin? You're looking to make the leap from the band of schmoes to the band of pros? Well, you can start by rehearsing at Space. Space is a state-of-the-art affordable venue for rehearsal and recording located just a few short miles south of downtown Austin. 31 spacious rooms, great PAs, and a very helpful and courteous staff. They have adapted to the COVID standards, and it is a very safe place to rehearse. You move in one way, you go in one door, you go out the other, you bring your own microphones. That's Space Rehearsal and Recording. Find them at 512-448-9518 or go to spaceatx.com and take the talent train from Schmoesville to Protown with Space Rehearsal and Recording. Let's get down. Hey, gang, let's face it. You're probably listening to this show and all of your other shows on your phone. Are you tired of filling up your phone with all of your favorite podcasts? Well, try Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is an app that allows you to stream thousands and thousands of shows right to your smartphone or pad. Download it for free at Stitcher.com or find it in your app store. Get the best in comedy, entertainment, science, sports, news, everything you want right there on Stitcher. Just go to Stitcher.com or find the app in your app store. I use Stitcher Smart Radio and I love it. That's Stitcher Smart Radio. Smarter way to listen to radio. Let's get down.
Did I get here? And now here is your host, I'm Johnny.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. If you live in Austin, it's been gorgeous, gorgeous. I'm doing this on Saturday of the weekend, and it is beautiful outside. It's like in the 60s, the sun is shining, there's no humidity to bum you out. It's nice and breezy. I got my windows open. I'm kind of suffering from allergies for it. I took a Zyrtec a few minutes ago, but you can hear my voice, right? That's the price I pay. I was talking to my cousin Jennifer on the phone. I just started sneezing like crazy, and I was like, well, that's what happens when I open the windows in my house. Sorry. I should have pushed the cough button on that, but I didn't. Anyway, it's a gorgeous day here on Saturday, and I'm recording this on Saturday because I'm getting ready to go to San Jose to meet my girlfriend's family. That's right, man. This is when they put you to the test. You go out to San Jose, you meet the family. That's what I'm going to do. It's a short trip, flying out Saturday, Sunday, family get together. Probably a lot of pressure. I don't know. Is it going to be long? I don't know. I heard they like cocktails. That's good. But then am I going to get all drunk and be weird? You know what I mean? Tell an appropriate source. I got to watch the consumption. That's what I got to do. I got to reel back. Got to make sure I eat, drink water, not cuss too much, and not get wasted and go all, sideways rock and roll on these people. You never know, man. You never know. Families surprise you. Families are weird. They're crazy. From what I understand, they're a little like my family. It's like people are drinking, people are laughing, people are crying, people are yelling, people are, getting it all out, whatever it is people do. I don't know, but I'll fill you in on it on Wednesday's show. That's right, we're dropping three shows again this week. I know the normal schedule, if you're just coming to the show for the first time or you're like, you check in every once in a while, normally it's Tuesdays and Fridays, but last week we did three shows, this week three shows. And in that case, they come out Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Makes sense, right? Actually, you know what? Friday's show was episode 1100 with UK folk Americana duo, The Gowdies, which have my same last name. Isn't that weird? We met on Instagram. I ended up talking to them, listening to their music. It's really good. The conversation's really good. They're really nice people. But back to episode 11. It was episode 1100. I didn't even talk about that in the intro. That's what happened to me. I didn't even talk about it in the intro, bro. So yeah, congratulations. We've been on the air for over or out there in the internet world and on your phone and shit for over a decade, and we're to the point where we hit milestones like 1100, and it's like, well, here's this Americana band from the UK, The Gowdies, surprise. Well, there's not, I mean, what's the fanfare at this point, you know? There's 5 bazillion podcasts out there. I'm glad I got in early. I'm glad you guys listened to the show. I know you listen to the show. Let us know you listen to the show. You know, and so I'm not too worried about it. I enjoy doing this. I enjoy having the conversations. I'd love to get off of the Zoom. And the one today was supposed to be in person, but I don't know if you normally listen to the show. A week ago, I suffered from some back issues. I did something on my back when I was out there in whatever the place is called where I went hiking. And man, I was laid out for 2 different days, and I had this podcast scheduled to happen in person, and then it didn't happen in person, and now then when we could do it, when we rescheduled, he couldn't do it in person, so we had to do it over Zoom. But over the last 10 years, my favorite thing about it has been sitting down, talking face to face, getting into it with people, talking about the real shit that happens in your life, and that can only happen so much on Zoom. You know what I mean? I feel like you can only go so deep on Zoom. And then it seems like I'm trying too hard to go deep is what it is, you know? But you've got like this computer, there's like, you know, my dog's running around, or maybe their wife is like, her husband is like, hey, you want some coffee? You know what I mean? Like, it's not the same as being like face to face in my place here, having the talk and getting into it. So hopefully now we're going to be able to do more of those. I'm trying to schedule those more. So weird, man. This whole coronavirus and COVID-19 thing, I don't have to tell you. But it's really fucked a lot of shit up for people. It's terrible. You know, what's funny is when it first came around, it was like February of 2020, I had today's guest on the show in person. That's right. That's Greg Gonzalez from the band Money Chicha. But let's go back to February of 2020. And I talked to him about it in the thing, but he was the first person that ever fist bumped me. Like, that was like, hey, well, let's not do a handshake, let's fist bump. And I was like, oh man, this is getting real. So he's back. We were going to do it in person, but then I did that back thing, whatever, threw it out, whatever it is that happens with your back. It hurt. I had to lay down without pain, or I could only be without pain if I was laying down. So anyway, now we got to get back together and talk about what's going on with Money Chicha. And like last year, they were doing a show. They were going to do a show with Jose Luis Carvalho, and they got all of this. They got a grant to bring him over and do it. And then it ended up not working out because of COVID. Once again, COVID's fucked a lot of shit up. But Money Chicha did get to finish some recordings with him, and then also had some recordings that they had done in April of 2019 at Sonic Ranch out in Tornillo, Texas. And we talk about Sonic Ranch out there. What a great studio that is. People do, there's a lot of famous people that do stuff out there. You'd be amazed. I can't go through the whole thing, but I can say Ministry, David Garza, Money Chicha, and a lot of other bands. Anyway, Money Chicha's new album, Chicha Summit, came out last Friday on October 15th. It's a fantastic album. And as I said, there's like 2 sides of this record. One side is classics of the genre and stuff that they did with Jose Luis Carvalho. And then the other side is what they did out at Sonic Ranch, which was like, you know, they got out spacey in this studio out in the middle of nowhere on this 2,500-acre pecan ranch. Getting into it out there in the middle of West Texas, out by El Paso, and they got weird and freaky and made a fucking great album. It's like 2 different vibes, but they go well together. That's why they divided it into 2 sides. Greg Gonzalez explains all about it. It's always great talking to him. He's such a great guy, man. And I always feel like when he's on, when Beto's on, when Adrian Quesada's on, like, I feel like I get an education in the music of my Latin brethren. Like, I'm Cuban, but these guys all are like more into like a South American vibe. They get into the Cuban thing, but they're more into this cumbia thing that's happening in South America and Chicha music. He explains all of that all the time. He gets into it. So their new album, Chicha Summit, dropped on Friday, October 15th. You should get out there and get it right now when you can. And they're celebrating with a record release show this Saturday, October 23rd at Radio Coffee right here in Austin. They're also getting out to San Antonio. They're doing Houston. They're doing Dallas. They're also doing Meanwhile Brewing in November. But you should get out and see them this Saturday, October 23rd at Radio Coffee. Pick up their record, their brand new record, Chicha Summit. You can find them at Chicha, moneychicha.com. Find them at moneychicha.com. Do it up. And here's my conversation with the amazingly talented and incredibly cool Greg Gonzalez. Let's get down. It is that kind of day, my man.
How's your back doing?
It's better. It's a lot better. Thank you. You ever have any of that shit?
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
You do?
Tour vans and bass playing. I mean, come on, bro.
Yeah, man. Eventually, it just gets you.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, man, it's been... I saw you, I guess it was at the very beginning of the pandemic. You were like one of the last guys I talked to in person, and it was when you guys were going to do the Jose Luis Carvalho show.
Yeah, yeah.
One-to-one.
Wild.
But you know what's interesting is that you were the first person that ever fist bumped me. And I remember when you left, talking to someone on the phone and going like, man, I think this shit's like really real. Like one of the dudes from Money Chicha was over and he's like fist bumping, saying goodbye. I was like, oh yeah, it's coming.
Yeah, you never know what it's going to be like, but my mom is a nurse and a professor at a university, teaches nursing and stuff, and she's been telling me for years about epidemiology and stuff, about this stuff coming around, you know, so I was like, oh, maybe this is the one.
Yeah, yeah, well, people, I mean, it seems like people knew it was coming, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't a, people in the know were not surprised, you're like, oh yeah, I mean, how many Ebolas and whatever swine flus can you dodge?
Right, right. So that leads me to this conversation, is that your new record, Chicha Summit, is you were supposed to do some collaborating with Jose Luis Carvalho then too, right?
Yeah, he's on the album.
Right, right, right. But you guys were going to do it when he was here?
Right, so what happened is he came the first time, and we had that show at Continental, we rehearsed, and we also did an all-day-long recording session where we recorded 7 songs, and the goal was to bring him back the following year. I got another grant, so what we had planned to do was finish the album with him, right? So it would be like those 7 songs and then a few more,
right,
to make a full-length recording, and we had planned to do a live show and to film it so that we would have like a video document of the whole situation that we could use to kind of like, you know, sell it to promoters and whatnot, and yeah, also have live recordings to flesh out an entire full length album. But, you know, COVID came along instead. I still got to keep the grant, but instead it pivoted to a live stream performance sort of situation with Jose.
Right.
And we like recorded some videos out of that will be coming out, you know, in the next couple months, just sort of like continue building the hype of the album.
It's a great album, man. Chicha Summit.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Chicha Summit was like a concept that, you know, probably 7 or 8 years ago, we did a show with Tixa from Tucson, formerly known as Chicha Dust, and Chicha Libre from Brooklyn, which is kind of like one of the first, if not the first American band that started playing Chicha music and really promoting it. You know, its leader is this guy, Olivier Conan, who put out a great compilation called The Roots of Chicha, which is kind of what brought to a lot of people in Europe and America's attention this style of music, you know. And it's funny, I interviewed him for my podcast, which has not been released officially yet, but he talked about it, and it what was really interesting is like there were all these bands in that same period in Peru and South America, Ecuador, right. Colombia, whatever. He focused mainly on the Peruvian stuff, but they had all kinds of varieties of sound. You know, there were bands with horns, some had female singers, some had more traditional Latin orchestration, some had guitars, some didn't. You know, some were more Brazilian and some were more tropical. And so he kind of curated the stuff that he liked the most, you know, which was like more of the kind of garagey sounding thing with more fuzz guitar and reverb and things. And in an attempt to not say, he didn't want to be a colonizer and be like, yo, this is chicha. You know, he was trying to say roots of chicha. These were the roots of the style that became known as chicha. Because technically chicha came along more in the late '70s, early '80s. And it has a sound that's really clean. It's like the guy, the guitar player, plugs directly into the mixing board, for instance.
Oh, wow. Like and the really vocalist, clean. Yeah.
Really clean. Really, instead of using reverb, they use delay a lot. So it has a very 80s kind of sound, really. Like the synthesizers they use, electronic drums, guitar is really clean, but with a lot of like kind of a slapback sound. And the vocalist would always have a ton of delay on his vocals. It's a great style, but, you know, he wanted to kind of like explore what the predecessor to that, right? And he was like, man, I got in all this trouble. People in Peru were really mad at me. They were like, this is Peruvian cumbia, or they called it cumbia amazónica, which is like Amazonian cumbia or whatever. And he was like, you know, I tried to make it obvious by calling it roots of chicha, that it wasn't actually chicha music, but somehow everybody just skipped the roots part and we're like, oh, this is chicha music. And he was like, the funny thing is like in Peru, chicha music is looked down upon because to them it's that stuff from the '80s, which was really like ghetto music, so to speak, like hood music. It was the music of the poor, the music of the I guess you would call them the native elements, the people who were more indigenous.
Right.
And so, you know, like a lot of Latin America, it's very classist and even racist. So it was looked down upon by like the well-to-do people. Whereas Peruvian cumbia was a lot more considered Latin, less indigenous. So to them, that was more accepted. It's kind of like one of those things that to us is kind of like, whatever, man, that shit sounds great. It all sounds great, you know. But like he even talked about how he went and played shows in Peru and like he would be hanging out with these masters of the style that he really loved and emulated. And they'd like, you know, scolded him for it. They were like, we don't play chicha music. This isn't chicha music. That's the music of the slum, you know, whatever. Yeah. It's strange. But then I talked to him about it and I was like, you know, the truth is like, it's just handy for people outside to have a label to put on it. It's for better or worse. It's like salsa music, you know, like, if you think about salsa music, people have this image of like Marc Anthony kind of stuff,
right?
Maybe, or the stuff from the '80s and nineties, but it really started in the '60s and seventies. And it was, you know, mostly from New York and Puerto Rico. And it was like all of the different people from the whole Latin diaspora coming together and everyone brought their own little flavor. You know, right. You'd have, a few Cubans, a few Puerto Ricans, a few Colombians, some Mexicans, some dudes from Ecuador, from Nicaragua, from wherever. And they all brought their own, you know, local flavor to it. And the mixture became this really unique thing. And they just kind of called it salsa, you know. Eventually it got, you know, stratified and dogmatized and became a thing where it was like, this is what salsa is supposed to sound like.
Right.
But it's similar with chicha, you know, like chicha works as a label because it sounds interesting. People are like, what is that? I want to know more about that.
Yeah.
If you say Peruvian cumbia, it's just confusing to people. Like chicha is like mysterious and sounds tropical and interesting.
Huh.
Yeah. Anyways, so Chicha Summit.
Yeah.
To get back long. That's like the long way to get back to this story. We played a show with Chicha Libre, Chicha Dust, and Money Chicha. We did a few shows in Houston, San Antonio, and Austin, and we called it the Chicha Summit. It's like a joke. And then later on, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna borrow that, you know, that name, Chicha Summit, And we created a couple tours where we toured with our friends, Dos Santos from Chicago, who are like a cool Latin band that also incorporates chicha elements, but also funk and other things. And then we did a show, we did a tour out west where we brought in La Chamba, which is a chicha band from LA. And then we started doing these, like, you know, I put together these parties here during South by Southwest, unofficial events that were called chicha summits, where we would get all these great Latin groups that were playing and play day shows and put us all together, you know?
Yeah.
So it became more than like a bunch of bands playing, paying tribute to Peruvian cumbia, and more about, like, you know, I've started calling it future cumbia, for lack of a better word, but like what this style of music is going to be like in the future, and like when it's gone beyond the boundaries of one country or one language or one region. You know, it's like worldwide, bands in Japan playing cumbia and bands in Eastern Europe,
right,
and whatever, you know. So I already had that kind of title, Chicha Summit, in mind, you know. I didn't think to put it on this album because originally it was going to be two albums.
Right.
You know, we recorded with Jose Carvalho,
right,
and that was going to be one album thing we just discussed, you know. And then we also went to Sonic Ranch out in Tornillo,
yeah,
and recorded a whole album. Yeah, we recorded 11 songs, and we're like, okay, this is going to be our album with our originals and some covers, and that's going to be more our sound, you know, because the Jose Carvalho stuff is great. But it was all his songs, and it was more of like a tribute to that traditional,
right,
classic style of music of Los Deseos and Chacalón and, you know, these other great artists from Peru, whereas our style is our style. It's like influenced by and informed by all that, but we bring our own weirdness and flavor to it.
Right.
So here we were stuck with like one album that was like 11 songs and another album that was now 7 songs. And we didn't have time to, like, or it wasn't time. We had all the freaking time in the world, but we were just stuck in the COVID. You know, it's like, what are we going to do? We can't go anywhere.
Right.
We can't really, like, do much. So we were like, well, let's just finish what we have and put it all together. Instead of having 1.5 albums, let's do one album with the best of all that, and then a single with kind of the leftover, you know, a sample,
yeah,
if you will. And that's what we came up with. And then it occurred to me, I was like, well, why don't we call it Chicha Summit? It's like that whole experience was about bringing together all these different, like, diverse expressions of modern Latin, you know, progressive music or whatever.
Right.
This is like bringing in two separate, you know, expressions, and they're meeting together, you know?
Yeah.
You have the Jose Carvalho style, which is like, you know, he defined and innovated and created that style. And we got the honor and the pleasure of working with him and being, learning from him and playing those songs with him. And then we have our style, which is, you know, separated and infused with our own influences. And the result was pretty great. You know, we had the two sides. And what made me think it would work is that we've been making vinyl, you know, and I was like, well, the issue is if you mix it up, you know, it's going to sound really different, right? You're going to have his songs and then our song and then his song, right, and then our song.
Right.
And it's going to be like two different sounding. I was like, well, what if it's like one side is like his side, one side is our side, and it's like each side has its own continuity, you know?
Right.
And that's what we came up with. And the summit is kind of like, then all of a sudden it became like, this is where the two meet, you know? You have the two faces of the mountain, if you will.
Right, right. That's awesome. Talk a little bit about going out to Tornillo to Sonic Ranch. I love that place, man.
Oh, yeah, me too. We had been out there before with Grupo Fantasma. That's where we recorded our most recent album from 2019, which was American Music Volume 7.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a really awesome experience out there, you know, just kind of locking ourselves away with all this great gear, kind of having no distractions or whatever, and just like focusing on creating music. So we wanted to do something similar with Money Chicha, although to kind of give it more of our, how do I put it? Our, you know, every band has its own personality, right?
Right, right.
It's like an amalgamation of all the characters involved.
Right.
And Money Chicha is like a different kind of personality, because it doesn't have vocalists and it doesn't have horn players. So you're left with like kind of the rhythm section guys, you know, and we have a different approach and a different way of expressing ourselves, even when we're carrying the weight of like doing melodies and things like that. So it had a whole different kind of vibe, and it was still great, but we were able to kind of like focus on that for, I think we had 3 or 4 days out there. We had a gig opening for Krungbin and at Marfa Myth. So it was like that money from the gig was enough to pay for the 3 or 4 days of studio time. You're like, well, let's make it a West Texas adventure.
Yeah.
You know, get all cosmic out there with the stars and the Huevos Rancheros. And, you know, the funny thing is like we recorded on this, all the fancy stuff, right? They had the nicest mics, biggest, fanciest Neve board that Madonna used to use, that was right. like part of Motown. We'd asked for like one of the small rooms, and we showed up and they're like, oh, well, all the small rooms are being used by more famous bands, but you can have the biggest room for the same price. So we ended up with like this ginormous, like the size of a basketball gymnasium room.
Jesus.
With like a 96 channel Neve board that was from Motown and all this classic weird shit, and we were like, man, we're a 5-piece band, so whatever.
The thing is the basis of all of your music is that ability, that communication between you guys while you're playing, right?
Yeah, for sure. It was a little bit strange, but you know, we all put our heads together and we collaborated a lot more than our first album. In this case, you know, if you even look at the credits, you'll see that like pretty much every song that's an original was like a group effort, you know? And that really changed the sound a lot. Before it was like me or Beth or Adrian, just kind of like our stock thing we've been trying to get away from, where we write the songs and show it to everybody and they kind of like interpret what we bring to them. Instead, it was like, okay, this is what I got. What do you got? What do you think about this? What if we change that, you know? And the results are really great. But the funny thing is, like, after we record in this pristine environment with all this great stuff, we came back and mixed it on Bethel's Tascam 388, which is like it's like an 8-channel quarter-inch tape machine.
Yeah.
Because that's what we had recorded with Jose Carvalho, you know? And you're like, well, we want it to sound similar. So that really gave it that kind of, like, garagey vibe that we needed. You know, it's like, even though we recorded everything great, we like dumped everything down to like, you know, 8 tracks and summed it. I was like, how can we just like make this as grimy as possible and like take away a lot of our options here, so we don't have to like get stuck with that.
Right. He runs everything through that he does there, right? That 388.
Not necessarily. I mean, he has that option.
Yeah.
You know, you can record through that, or you can also do it all digitally, you know, and we've done both in the past. You know, I mean, it was like a group effort, and that was another part of it, is like some of it was recorded at Sonic Ranch, some was recorded at his studio, Leche House.
Right.
And then I did a bunch of overdubs. I recorded all the vocals at Kiko Villamizar's studio, which is called Huepa Studios. So I ran all that through whatever he has. And then I recorded all the percussion, or not all, but like 95% of the percussion overdubs at my studio, the Electric Bass Camp, which is in Mosaic. And then we went back to Leche House and recorded a few more overdubs and did all the mixing there. And then we sent it to Spain to get mastered.
Wow.
So I think summing it through the machine, the idea was to kind of take all these different sounds and engineers and everything and kind of just like mush it together so that it wouldn't be so obvious.
Right. To give it one cohesive sort of sound, at least one sound.
Exactly.
Victor Cruz played on. I love that guy, man.
Yeah, he's super talented. I knew he was a great percussionist and a great musician, but I interviewed him also for my podcast.
What is your podcast? Wait, let's pause right here. I wanted to ask last time, you just like brushed by it, but like, what is your podcast?
Well, the podcast isn't released officially yet, but over COVID, I interviewed about 20 cumbia musicians from all over the country, and also Mexico and Colombia. I worked with Kiko Villamizar on some of it, and with my friend Brian Ramos on some of it. But, you know, those guys got busy and I ended up like keeping most of the files and started mixing them and putting it all together. You know, I did most of the interviews too. So I have all this content that I'm kind of sitting on, but I did one with Victor Cruz from Nemegata. Uh-huh. And, you know, I had no idea his backstory, but, you know, he's such a deep percussionist and student of folklore, like Colombian music, that it's like, you know, I just thought he was like a Colombian dude who knew it. He grew up in that environment, you know?
Right.
Just like, you grew up here, you kind of instinctively know something about rock and roll or whatever,
right,
you know, or hip hop. But he, like, went to Berkeley and studied percussion, you know?
Oh,
and
really?
He, like, yeah, he got a degree from Berkeley in percussion was his main thing. But then he also, like, as a child, he played in, like, Colombian groups in his hometown. They had what's called a Casa de Cultura, where they would teach people, like, the kind of traditional music of Colombia. And then he moved to Florida, and there he played in, like, high school band and played, like, saxophone and, like, started playing percussion there. So it was, like, a lifelong journey, you know, for him. And it went from, like, learning in Colombia to learning in Florida to learning in Berkeley and then in New York and then coming to Austin. So all the different people that he worked with and learned from was pretty impressive. Like, he played congas in jazz bands.
Wow.
You know, and... Yeah,
they are. That makes a lot of sense. Their rhythm, it can get really complex, which is really awesome. And you know, one thing about them, because there's this sort of like, this happens to me kind of with blues. Like I can't really tell it all apart. And you know how like someone will say like, oh, Latin music all sounds the same to me, kind of thing. But they're one of the things I think that really. The three of them singing harmony is really huge, but I think they also have like a lot of chants and stuff in their music. There's a lot of, there's a lot of getting into trance in their music.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. You know, that when Beto and I went to Colombia, I got another grant to go to Colombia with Kiko, and, you know, we invited Beto along. He felt like, you know, he's an integral part of the group, you know?
Yeah.
And we met all these Colombian guys there playing folkloric music. We went to see Carnaval, you know, which is like basically one of the big events in Barranquilla, like a right where Colombia or Cumbia kind of was born right there, essentially. And they were telling us about how they could tell the difference between these music styles by how they would tune the drums or by the kind of like licks that they would do,
right,
you know, or how they tune their flutes, or like some of the like these real subtle differences that we would never pick up on,
right,
you know. And you could tell, they could tell how someone played, they could tell who his mentor was, you know, like, oh, those licks sound like this other guy, so you learn from him, you know. And oh, you tune your drum like this, so you're from this part of the country.
Yeah.
Or you tune your flutes this, like some guys would use like Western tuning and others would have more of like an indigenous kind of tuning, you know, where it wasn't like perfectly on key or whatever.
Right.
And it was very distinctive for their region or their village or whatever. It was really eye opening to see all those differences and how they communicate with each other and kept track of like all the different people. It's really like a oral tradition in a lot of ways because of that.
Right. Right. You know, what's interesting is even in all of the bands here, that it's almost like a giant family of bands. Cause that there's a lot of people that end up working with Beto, like Superfónicos, like Nemegata, and you guys just from Grupo Fantasma, the family tree that grows out of that band-wise is huge, but each one of you guys has your own sort of like distinct sonic thing that you do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. All the Colombian dudes, at least that I know of in town, are, you know, interact with each other in the same community, and they kind of have variations, you know, where they play with each other and learn from each other, you know?
Right.
And we have a similar situation, but you know,
what's funny.
So I think
there are bands like Superfónicos that are to me like a great like party band. Like that's a band, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And then Nemigata yeah. is almost like the Rush of the bands, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they definitely all have their own
yeah.
personalities. I mean, so Superfónicos, you know, all the guys there are into Colombian music, but, you know, Jaime, the lead vocalist, is the true Colombian in the group, you know? So he shows them a lot of stuff, and they play in all these other groups together, whatever. But they have a lot more of that kind of Western American
right.
type influence. You know, some of the dudes have Colombian background or Puerto Rican background, but, you know, in general, they bring their own influences to the table. So, and you can hear that it's got a more kind of a rock jazz sort of vibe, a little bit more Afrobeat and things like that. Whereas with Nemigata, they're all Colombian dudes. You know, there's two guys from Bogota area right, and one guy from Medellin. You know, then you have other groups here like Huache, which is kind of like an amalgamation that plays traditional Colombian folkloric music, you know, and it's got guys from all these different bands come together with also local people.
Right.
You know, or you have a band like Kiko Villamizar, where he's like, you know, he switches up his band a lot and he's the band leader. He's from Medellin, Colombia, but he's been here longer than those other dudes, so he kind of has his own thing going, you know. So those dudes will join him and bring a Colombian flavor, but it's all like under the umbrella of his vision. So it's pretty interesting to see how they do it. It reminds me of, like, you know, it's to me it's a lot like jazz, you know, like these jazz bands. I used to be like a huge jazz head, and I would listen to these bands, and it was always the same guys, you know. But they would like have, depending on who was leading the band and a couple different little members here and there, would really change the sound. So you might have like Miles Davis quintet, right? And he'd have John Coltrane in his right, band right. with Cannonball Adderley and Paul Chambers on bass and Philly Joe Jones on the drums and you know, maybe like Bill Evans on piano.
Right, right.
And then you would have John Coltrane's band. It would be John Coltrane with Philly Joe Jones on drums and Paul Chambers on bass. But he wouldn't have an alto, and he'd have a different piano player, you know?
Right, right.
And so, like, they all had, like, variations on the same kind of thing where they would change one or two different parts, and, you know, you could still hear some of the same elements. Like, you could hear how they influenced each yeah, other, yeah. but everybody expressed that influence in their own way.
Yeah. Does that conversation ever happen when you guys are making music, like writing music, or it's just happening?
You know, unfortunately, we don't have like deep philosophical discussions about music often enough. You know, usually we just are like messing with each other or making jokes.
Right.
When we're writing music, it's just kind of, at its best, it's just coming from the gut, you know, and to me, at the best is when we're like pushing each other also not to fall into our comfort zones, because we're really familiar with each other's comfort zones. Like, sometimes it's a great thing to like, you know what, I know John would know the perfect beat to play on this, you know, or
right.
or Lou would knows what I'm talking about when I say it needs to do this or whatever. But other times you want to be like, hey, man, don't do that thing you always do. You know, don't use that sound. Let's do it. Let's try something different, you know.
Yeah.
And fortunately, there's enough like intimacy and comfort amongst us all that when we push each other like that, it's, you know, like sometimes people get defensive about that. They're like, oh, man, well, then you played the Dan.
Yeah.
but we know what's up, and it'll be like, OK, you know, I see what you're saying.
There's that classic Let It Be thing of that where George and Paul get into the thing. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't. Like,
I'll play whatever you want me to play, or I won't play at all. I'm just here to please you, man.
Like, oh, jeez.
Yeah. So it happened. I guess it happens to all of us.
That's some heavy British shade right there.
Yeah,
man.
Dude. Yeah, it totally is. So you guys are going to get out and be playing some shows, which is fantastic. Welcome back.
Yeah. We're playing all. Yeah, thanks, man. It's actually, October has turned into super busy time between all the bands, but mainly with Money Chicha, which is wild. It's welcome to come back, but it's also like, you know, it went from like a trickle to a flood real quick, and that's always kind of, I always get wary when that happens. So right. like, man, I don't want to be like, for one, you don't have time to like rehearse and come up with new stuff. And you start to like, be like, man, how many times can we go to the well before it gets old to,
right.
to the audience or more dangerously to us? If it's, I don't worry about it getting old to the audience because they don't hear every show we play, you know, like,
right.
like you might see us once a month in Austin, right. you know, and that would be like, wow, you're a hardcore fan. But we hear each other like 5 or 6 times a month at gigs or sometimes 10 times a month. And we are like, man, this song again, or,
right.
you know, you don't want to, I never wanted to be going through the motions.
Of course. Does Victor or Kiko, they're going to be playing with you live or no? They just joined you on the record.
They just joined us on the record. I mean, they're part of the extended family now, and they're always welcome to come out. And I always, you know, invite them to, but you know, they got their own stuff going on, and it, you know, we're not trying to like reinvent what we do, you know?
Right.
I would love to bring Jose Carvalho back and do another event with him, but without him around, we're not really going to play all those songs, maybe a couple of them, but you know, it's not the same without him, you know, right, like right. a big part of that is that's him, you know?
Yeah.
But we have so much new material from the record that we've been playing along with our old stuff. So there's plenty of new stuff and plenty of fun stuff all over.
Yeah, man. You guys are doing, people can go find you guys at Chicha at moneychicha.com, but you're playing at Radio Coffee here in Austin on the 23rd of October. This will be out before then.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
People can get out and see that show. I'll definitely be there. I have the night off. But,
right on.
Yeah. I was just about to ask you something and I lost my train of thought. Is Tony still out there at the Sonic Ranch?
Yeah, I mean, he's like a weird,
yeah.
And I don't mean weird, like he's a bad person or anything. He's just like, trying to find the right adjective to describe it. He's like a figure who will just like appear, you know, like we'll be playing and I'll look up and he's in the control room, like peeking in.
Yeah.
And then we finish the song and he's gone, you know,
right.
Or we'll be like getting breakfast and he'll be there finishing up his breakfast.
Right.
And we'll be like, hey, what's up, Tony? You know, but he doesn't like, he's not like a presence that he's like constantly there where you always come across. And you just kind of like, you know, you cross paths in a weird way. Like you'll see his car there in the morning when you're getting coffee and then he's gone, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got a lot of business to run with the pecan farm these big rooms.
For those of you that are wondering what we're talking about, there's a recording studio. You can go look it up. It's Sonic Ranch and it's in Tornillo, Texas. And it's in like a 2,500 acre pecan ranch or something like that. And
yeah, something like that.
You know, I met him and went out there the first time, like over 20 years ago. It's probably almost like 25 years ago now when it was first getting going. But I've seen him ever since then. And like, it is like literally like he's walking out of La Zona Rosa and I'm walking into La Zona Rosa at South by Southwest. But then we end up spending hours like running around together. He's an interesting, strange dude, but he not strange in a bad way. He's just like, he's eccentric. That's the word.
Yeah.
It's like a crazy old recording studio, pecan farm owning, crazy dude. So, this is what I was going to ask you in the music, when you're working on the music in any given, group, like in all the other groups, do you guys bring in music or do you write it together like you did this music for this record?
Well, traditionally, the way it had been for a long time was like one of us would write almost all the music, then we would bring it in to the band. We might do some minor tweaks. Or if it was Brown Out or Phantasma, our arranger would like take whatever horn idea we came in with and either, you know, spruce it up or discarded and come up with something more advanced. And the vocalist would write the vocals, right?
Right.
But more and more lately, we've been kind of making room. I think part of it is because we have so many projects going on and people are saving their own thing for their own thing, you know?
Right.
But another part of it is just like wanting to expand our sound. And it's like, you know, you start to get kind of stagnated to a certain extent when you're writing for the same group of people with the same instrumentation, and it's always the same people writing it. So opening that up has really helped our sound to evolve and change and grow, you know, and we feel comfortable enough with each other now that we're like, okay, we can trust each other to bring something great to the table, or take our feedback and not get all hurt by it or whatever, you know?
Right.
So that the other thing is, like, I've gotten frustrated personally in the past where, you know, as a bass player, a lot of times, you know, you end up coming up with a lot of stuff. It's kind of like being a drummer. You know, it's like,
right.
They come to you and they're like, here's the chord progression. And that's what you got, you know, or here's the idea, whatever. And then you add all kinds of lines and all kinds of transitions and fills and things that really build a song. They give it direction. They give it form, strength, and structure. And at the end of the day, you don't get any piece of the credit. Someone else wrote the melody and wrote the chord progression and wrote the lyrics.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, okay, but, you know, it's like if you win a race and the guy who built the car is the only guy who gets any credit, it's like, well, I'm the one who drove the damn car.
Right. Know? Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that I'm not saying the guy who built the car wasn't a genius or wasn't awesome, but, you know, it's not like everyone else should be an afterthought.
Right.
So for me personally, I've been trying more and more in whatever I write to incorporate everybody involved and give them some credit, even if it was just a little bit, even if they just came along and played the stock part. I'm like, okay, well, you're going to get a little piece because you put your fills on it, you know, because you put your flavor on it, your tone, your tuning of your drums. Like, you might play the most straightforward thing, but if you come with that perfect sound, like, you know, you deserve something for that. Like,
anybody
could have played that part, but nobody's going to sound like you did, you know?
Right.
And that's just me personally, philosophically at this point in my life. I might feel more greedy if I was making more money from publishing, maybe.
Right. Well, I remember when in like the late 90s, I was in a band and we signed a deal with a subsidiary of Elektra and then got a publishing deal with like Warner Chappell and stuff. And our manager at that point, like before everything started happening, was like, you guys should really sit down and look at, because there were songs that, like, if everyone was in the room when we wrote a song, then the song was split four ways. Right? That just makes sense.
Right.
We also did a thing where there was a non-writer share, where there was a percentage you got because your bass line lifted the song. And you know what I mean? Which is a great, I guess I'm just saying that because young bands should probably do it, because that keeps bands together. That kind of thing does.
Yeah, I mean, it keeps bands together and it keeps everyone invested in the music. It's like, why do you care if you sell the album if you're not getting any profit from it or any credit?
Right. You know? Right.
And I'm a big believer in credit, you know? There were a lot of albums where I had ideas where I was like, hey, why don't you try this? Or why don't you try that? Or, you know, I think it needs this or that kind of sound. And I didn't get a production credit. I didn't get a mixed credit or anything. And it would piss me off afterwards. And it built a lot of resentment in me that I had to get over. And to this day, that's a big reason why I'm like, okay, I don't want to do that. Now it gets a little bit more complicated with like for instance, with a big band where people are reading charts or something,
right.
Then I'm kind of like, okay, you're reading the chart that somebody wrote, you know, if you did a solo, then yeah, you deserve credit. Nobody told you what notes to play and that solo really put the shit over the top.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, there's definitely some lines to be drawn there, but it's, you know, it's a personal thing, I guess. Everybody has their own way of doing it. I understand too, like, you know, every business is different and like the saying goes, you don't get what you deserve. You get what you negotiate.
Right. I wanted to ask you a question about improvisation before. That's what it was. And I remember when I think it was when you guys were first starting out playing, was the first thing you did was that weekly thing at the gallery, right?
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, we had been playing before that, but that's when we really started playing consistently. Before that, it'd be like one gig every 6 months.
Right. So I remember being at that gig a few times and thinking to myself, like, surely they are making up a song on the spot. Did you ever do that there? Or was that just my own fantasy of what was happening?
I mean, yes and no. It's not that cut and dry where it's not like you're like, okay, we're starting from a blank slate. It's kind of like jazz again. Like if you have a chord progression, you know, like you could say, let's play a blues, you know, and in a sense, you are making up a song on the spot. Right. But in another sense, it's as old as time itself, and it's the same structure and the same as anything else, you know? So we might have like, these are the two chords that are in this song, and we're just jamming on it forever, and somebody comes up with a melody and it goes to a new place and whatever, you know?
Right.
And it is essentially a new song at that point, but it didn't like grow out of a vacuum and some intentional, like, we're just going to like Grateful Dead it up here and make something out of nothing.
Right. Right. Let me ask you that, because do you guys like, is there that sort of like, do jam festivals and shit reach out to you guys? Because I see how you would fit in that world, in what, you know what I mean?
I wish they would, man. Yeah, I wish they would. I think, you know, it's weird. Like, I feel personally like festivals put together some really great stuff these days, and they've gotten a lot more diverse than they used to be, and I really appreciate that. And here comes the but. The but is, I don't feel that they're very adventurous with their booking.
No.
You know, they don't really, like, they might be like, oh, we're going to try out this new band nobody's heard of that's great, but that new band is, like, in a style that already has been there forever. Like, it's a new band nobody's heard of that plays soul music, or that plays funk music.
Right.
Or that, you know, that's not like, here's a new band that nobody's heard of that plays African music.
Right.
You know? I personally think that we could totally fit in all that, you know, if somebody would just like listen with an open heart, you know, like people who hear us, I think like our sound is unique enough that they don't hear us and think, oh, this is a cumbia band. They hear it and they're like, this is some weird shit. There's like a guitar player shredding like metal.
Yeah.
And there's like classic, you know, organ sounds that are psychedelic, you know, it sounds like acid rock at moments, and then other times it sounds like straight up Latin music. And in my mind, it reminds me of stuff like Frongbin, I thought was really similar. Like, they kind of do this style of music, although they've kind of veered more towards like, you know, funky kind of stuff.
What band?
But originally they, Frongbin.
I don't know them.
They're from Houston. They're doing pretty good right now. They did a song with Leon Bridges.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's like a 3-piece band, bass, guitar, and drums. And they play a lot of like funk stuff, a lot of instrumental things. But when they started out, it was very like Turkish and like kind of like Cambodian psych rock influence, you know, like it had a lot of that kind of weird worldy stuff, but with like a super funky backbeat, so it sounded like a sample on a record or something, you know. You didn't think like, oh, this is some Cambodian song. You're like, man, this sounds like it could be a sample on a really cool hip-hop song or whatever, you know.
Yeah
But I mean, it's similar to that. I'm like, I don't think people who hear this are gonna think cumbia. They're gonna be like, man, this is really interesting. There's a drummer playing, but he doesn't have a snare drum.
Right.
You know?
Right.
You know, everything else about it is not that out there. You're like, oh, there's congas. I know what congas are. There's an organ and a guitar and a bass. It's not like we're up here with sitars and like bagpipes and shit, you know?
Yeah. I did see you guys. It wasn't, I don't know. It was a festival. It was some kind of thing that was on the east side, and it was kind of rainy and gray.
We played a map fest a couple times, which is the thing that they used to do, which was a really cool event. It used to be put on by KTX, I think, and it was like they would have bands play at different parks around town, and people could like ride their bikes from one park to the next.
No, this, yeah. this was a, I did watch you guys with Lori Gallardo, but it was a bunch of bands playing, cause I saw a bunch of different friends of mine. I didn't have to play that day and I was super stoked. I went down there and just hung out all day.
Yeah. We did play Pachanga Fest once, but I think that was a hot day.
Yeah.
I don't know. We haven't played a ton of festivals in Austin, to be honest, or really anywhere. We played a really great festival in Acapulco that was fun.
That's cool. Well, man,
I think we do well in festivals.
Yeah, I think so too. I've been a fan since the beginning, and I'm a fan of all of you guys as music people and as human beings. You're all like great people. Like that group.
Well, thank you.
That group of guys you guys started off together are like a soulful group of fucking cool guys. Not to mention,
thank you, man. Appreciate that.
It's true. It's true. And I always feel like, I get an education when we have these talks too, man. I learn a lot about music. It's great, man. Hopefully the listeners are too. People can check out Chicha Summit. This will be coming out a week from today. So the record will be out and you can go check it out right now. It's amazing. The vinyl, is that in a hold up zone or is it coming?
It's coming. Well, so the label is from Spain.
Okay.
And they print, I think, in Poland or the Czech Republic. So because of COVID and supply chains, everything's a little bit wonky. The release date they told me was October 15th, but I still don't have a shipping date.
Okay.
That I'm going to actually receive it. They're taking pre-orders for the 45 and the album, as well as a repress of our first album on their website. So you can go there, or you can wait and get it from me directly whenever we get it.
Right.
You know, I'm also taking pre-orders. If you guys want to reserve a copy, you can DM Money Chicha on Instagram or Facebook, whatever, and say, hey, reserve me a copy, and I'll send you a form where I'm keeping track of everybody's, you know, mailing address thing.
Yeah.
When they come in, those will be the people who get them first. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah. And you'll be in San Antonio and Houston and Dallas, but on October 23rd, you'll be at Radio Coffee. Also, on the 20th of November, you'll be at Meanwhile Brewing. I just played there a few weeks ago. I love that place, man.
I haven't been there yet, to be honest, but I heard about it, and they offered us a gig, and I was like, yeah, man, I love beer.
Yeah, me too. Hopefully I can get out there and see that one too, because I'm just a huge fan, and let me know when you put out your Cumbia podcast. I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
Do you have a name for it yet?
It's called This is Cumbia.
All right. That's good. This is Cumbia with Greg Gonzalez.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
This is Cumbia.
Well, congratulations.
In a world.
In a world of salsa.
Without snare drum.
Thank you so much for doing the show. And thanks again for dealing with my back. I'm glad that we were able to do it. It's always great to catch up with you. And I'll probably see you on the 23rd.
Absolutely, man. Well, have a good one.
All right, brother, man. You too.
Stay safe.
Take care.
Bye.
That's Greg Gonzalez from Money Chicha. Their album, Chicha Summit, is out now. See them this Saturday here in Austin at Radio Coffee. Go to moneychicha.com for all of your Money Chicha needs. Always great talking to Greg. Always an education, isn't it? He's really great at teaching stuff about music. I love him. And I love him. Greg Gonzalez, Money Chicha. Find them at moneychicha.com. Check out their album, Chicha Summit. It's unbelievable. The song you're hearing here is called Fuente. That's the song I'm playing. And hey, don't forget to subscribe to this podcast, wherever it is you listen to podcasts, be it Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Spotify, Stitcher, anywhere. New shows all the time. In fact, coming with a new one on Wednesday. I'll tell you how it went, meeting my girlfriend's family out in San Jose. I will. All right? Let's hear the rest of this great song, Fuentes, from the band Money Chicha, from their new album, Chicha Summit. Have a great week. Let's get down.
El agua reciclada manantial no se puede parar, es una realidad. Machete a tu camino en el maizal, desde el Amazonas hasta el Boreal, siembra y ponte a
plantar la semilla ancestral. Te indica dónde estás y así puedes saber para dónde vas. Hay que entender las estrellas, van a ver.